Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
The amount of time that we spend on social media is quite alarming, and it really does depend on which country you live in. But what does it actually say about us? Professor Anton Harber is the Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression. Good morning. Thanks for joining us once again. How are you doing?
Good morning. You're distracting me from my social media, so let's make this quick.
Absolutely. So you can get back to posting things on Instagram. What? But it is fascinating because we see different mediums used by different age groups, different areas. It really is fascinating how this is evolving.
It is, and it shifts over time, you know. Yeah. When you think Facebook is established, then TikTok takes over. A new one comes, one goes down, one goes up, and the others adapt to try and be more like the new one. It's a constantly shifting, changing world. But it does have serious implications for the way we relate to each other, for mental health issues, for our access to information, for all sorts of things.
So it's interesting because initially I was reading a lot of things about why social media, Facebook and Instagram is quite bad for us, especially for our youth, because they're seeing everybody else living this unbelievable lifestyle. But then I read something else saying, but actually it's not as bad as we think, because even our youth are presenting their best version of themselves to the world on social media. How does this work, and what do we see in terms of trends?
Well, let me say first of all that every new media creates concerns about its impact.
Okay.
We have to remind ourselves, you know, when television came, people thought it would have a terrible impact, and it has a positive and a negative impact. And you have to remind yourself, it's not the media, it's the way we use it.
Absolutely.
And the way we manage it and the way we make it part of our lives or not. So it's very much how we use the medium rather than the medium itself.
Right, right. And, of course, we have control of that. But at the same time, our kids in particular, and we are also, I guess, vulnerable to what we see going on around us.
That's true. And there are particular concerns about social media and young girls in particular, and the way it can be used and can be harmful to them. You might recall there was a controversy a few years ago when an insider in Facebook leaked research they had done that said that it had serious implications for the mental health of young women, and Facebook just ignored it. So it created a controversy about them not paying attention to these kinds of issues.
What about the toxicity of Twitter? You know, that's obviously something I can relate to a little bit more. I mean, over the weekend, it was fascinating. There was this whole debate taking place about whether Anne Frank had white privilege. And I actually nearly fell over when I saw it as a discussion. Here's a woman that was a child who was killed, murdered because she was Jewish, and there was a discussion around whether she had white privilege or not on social media. And it actually became a real conversation. And it's damaging, that type of thing.
Yes, yes. So very much part of the concern is that a medium like Twitter amplifies crazy, foolish, even damaging voices.
Right.
And it really does amplify them, and it can spread fast. And what adds to it is the fact that on some of these platforms in particular, the algorithm stirs up controversy. It's designed to capture you, to make you stay. And they've learned that they do that best with controversy and stuff that makes you angry and upset.
Right.
So I think part of the issue is that the platforms themselves are quite ruthless and uncaring, or some of them at least, in trying to get you addicted and to stay on the platform as long as possible, even if it's at the cost of your safety and your mental health. And safety is a big issue, particularly for women and young women on the internet.
It was fascinating to me is if somebody said, and somebody wasn't on Twitter, and they said to me, should I go on the platform? Should I join Twitter? I'm not sure that I would say yes.
I would say that you shouldn't join it unless you're able and willing to manage it properly and appropriately. Because a lot of it is about whether you have the capacity and the willingness to manage your interaction with other people through it.
Right.
But you need to be aware that it's designed sometimes to make you addicted, to keep you for too long, and you are vulnerable when using it. Your safety can be compromised. It can affect your mental health.
Of course, the whole discussion around censorship is something that we've spoken about. Censorship, keeping people on, deciding who should be managed. Twitter hasn't got it right yet. Do you think they ever will? Will we ever reach a stage where most people are comfortable about what they can see and who can speak on Twitter?
That's a very good question and hard to answer, but I would say that historically we've always taken time to learn how to use and manage new media technology. And so I expect in time we will learn with these, or we will walk away from them. I mean, don't forget that when they become a problem, people often walk away from them, and they don't always remain as popular as they were. But I think we're grappling, you know, across the world, we're grappling with how best to manage social media, whether it's up to the companies to act more responsibly, or whether it's necessary for governments to step in and regulate, and then how do you regulate without affecting the positive side of free speech on the internet?
Right. In terms of the other social media platforms, Twitter being the most perhaps damaging from an information perspective, but when we look at Instagram, there we've got other issues in terms of body image. We've got issues around aspiration and creating false ideas of what the world should look like. Overall, is social media a positive, or has it done more damage than good? What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I've no doubt that you know, there are great, great positives about communication, about these as social and all kind, you know, tools used in all kinds of ways. Our ability to stay in touch with each other, to build communities online, and to get access to information. These are all huge positives that one can't underplay. But we do have to learn how to manage it and how to use it properly and how to avoid the damaging and dangerous sides. And I think a lot of that is about education.
Right.
I think our schools...
I was just going to say, are schools actually... And I have no idea what the answer is, or if you would even know, but are schools dealing with this? Are schools educating our kids to be discerning around all forms of social media?
And not enough. Not enough. In this country, it's only done sporadically. There isn't a kind of clear guidelines or curriculum on teaching children what they need to know about managing and understanding social media. It's done, but it's spottily done, and it's definitely something that would help a great deal if people were made more aware of the issues and children were better equipped to deal and manage with it, and they were more social media literate. To put it in a phrase, I think that would matter a lot.
What's interesting is that emerging markets apparently spend the most time on social media, with younger populations in most of these markets potentially driving the growth. And I see that Nigeria spends the longest time per day connected to social media sites, with the average user signed on for more than 4 hours in Nigeria, which is an incredibly high number.
It is, and it's clearly an unhealthy number. Those numbers reflect the youthfulness of the population, but it's balanced also against the fact that there's often less media less internet access in these countries than there is in the north.
Right, and that makes sense because in countries with aging populations, such as Japan, their internet usage is much lower, 51 minutes. So you compare Japan at 51 minutes with Nigeria, where it's 4 hours and 7 minutes, and that does reflect exactly what you're saying, is an age-related bias, I guess.
Yes, yes. But don't forget that not having access to the internet, so think of the other extreme, people who don't have access to the internet because they don't have, for example, data, so poorer people have less access. Mm. And this adds to levels of social inequality and marginalization because if you're looking for jobs, if you're looking for information, if you're looking for opportunities, if you're looking to educate yourself, then access to the internet is absolutely critical. So,
Actually, another point as well is that if you don't have access to internet, to social media and news sites like this, then you're equally actually as vulnerable to misinformation because you're hearing it from somebody else, which and that might be completely false and unverifiable. So the flip side of that is that with social media, you are able to verify, which goes back to your point that you were making, is that it's all about education.
I think that's quite correct. So the answer is not to get rid of social media. The answer is to manage it properly and to learn as a society how to regulate and direct it properly.
Professor Anton Harbour, Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression, joining us this morning talking about social media.